It is my great pleasure to be here today and to be with you all. You know, it's really, really, really tough to follow the Lieutenant Governor when he speaks because he is so good and he does such a tremendous job. So the passionate plea you heard from him today is genuine, it's real, and it's something from the heart, and I think you all can feel that. As I prepared for today, had a number of thoughts about a lot of different things. I was guided somewhat by some information provided by your planning committee and asked for a group of items to be discussed, and I'm prepared to do that. But, Ron Crouch this morning, I couldn't help but think about some of the things that he was talking about when he was talking about the number of kids and families, and you have to be, if you're a child, you had to have parents and so forth. It reminded me, my wife and I actually have three children, and she used to have a saying, went something like this, you're not married until you have kids, and you don't have kids until you have more than one, okay? You have more than one. So there's something to be said for that, Ron, and I think that's exactly true. When we had our third child, my wife also said that having three was a lot more than just having one more than two. Now, that's when the logic, kind of worked on me a little bit. But I got that. You know, as soon as we took the third child home and I realized there was always someone who was the odd child out, I got that. It worked very well. I am very appreciative of the opportunity and the invitation to be here today and to speak a little bit about transportation. A number of things, transportation and the economy. There's so many different directions that you can go with a topic like that. And so I was very glad when the group said, look at these four or five things and tell us a little bit about those. And then, perhaps there'll be some time for question and answer. And I'm certainly happy to entertain any questions as I finish the presentation. The suggested topics, of course, first and foremost in the mind of most people out in this part of the country, actually two projects vie very, very heavily for that. But if you look at the Pinerol and Purchase areas together, the future of Interstate 69 is the question that everyone asks. And let me say to you that is something we've taken very, very seriously the last few years, how to create the opportunity for Interstate 69. Many of you remember Ted Merriman, who worked for the cabinet for many years. Ted, when he retired from the chief district engineer role, I enticed him to come back to the cabinet and work for us as our I-69 leader, our I-69 project manager. When Ted retired for the second time, I had the great good fortune of having another fellow who had recently retired from the cabinet who I was able to entice to come back and help us in this role. And I want you all to know that I have as much faith in this gentleman, Gary Ballantyne, Gary's on the front row here, as I had in Ted Merriman. And for those of you in this region who worked with Ted and know the character that he brought to our processes, I hope that represents how much I think of Gary. So Gary's been instrumental in helping us keep the I-69 projects on track. And that is our goal, it's our intention. We've got a lot of good things in motion that will culminate one of these days in the red, white, and blue I-69 shield being on our parkway system from Fulton to Henderson. So we're incredibly excited about that. The projects that we're doing, you've probably heard Gary enunciate those many times, and I'm not gonna belabor that by running through in intimate detail all of those. But suffice to say that someday the connection of Fulton to what Tennessee is doing. And by the way, I've heard some negatives about Tennessee kind of pulling the plug on part of their I-69 alignment. John Shore, the commissioner of Tennessee DOT, is a very good friend of mine. I know exactly what John is doing, and he's very wise. What he's doing is he's constructing or planning to build I-69 from the Fulton-Dyersburg area down to the connection that runs across the Mississippi River over to I-57, and they connect I-57 south toward Memphis. That's much easier, much cheaper, and frankly, as easy a ride as rebuilding all of the route all the way down to Memphis. So I understand why he's doing that. I understand the mechanics behind it from a funding standpoint. And I think he's smart for looking at what he has and trying to maximize it in much the same way that we're doing with the parkway system here in Kentucky. I used to joke that, you know, the Interstate 69 corridor runs all the way from Mexico to Canada. And I've served for many years, or did serve as Kentucky's primary representative on the I-69 task force, the steering committee, that was responsible for guiding the project throughout the country with all the other states involved. And it's a situation where I used to say, you know, many of these other states were building brand new roads in areas that had no roads. And here in Kentucky, I told them, I said, you know, we built our I-69 corridor many, many years ago. We're just glad that you're catching up with us. So that's, you know, that's been a positive for us. We've had a lot of good things to work with, and we've been moving those projects forward. The projects at Fulton, at some point, we'll be adding the interchange reconstruction at Wingo, to move on up the parkway to Mayfield, then on to Benton, up to I-24, the interchange with the Purchase Parkway, and then over to Hopkins County. We've got a project that was just let this week. We're looking to decide to award, but it's the interchange with the Pennerile Parkway and the Western Kentucky Parkway. And what we're doing there will make the parkway more interstate compliant and allow the Federal Highway Administration to actually put the shields on that whole section of roadway. As you move north of the Western Kentucky Parkway, we have interchange modifications at Morton's Gap and Sebree, Henderson, other places along the route. And ultimately, someday, our goal is to figure out with Indiana how to satisfactorily cross the river at Henderson. So lots of good things going. I think there's some support for that. But I-69 is something Governor Beshear has committed to from his first day. Being a native Western Kentucky, and I am incredibly proud of the progress that we've been able to make there, and working hard to make sure we can continue that all the way through to conclusion. So, Interstate 69, I think we're in good shape and working forward in positive fashion. The other major project in this part of the region we've known each other too long. But the other major project in this region is the completion of the U.S. 68 Kentucky 80 Highway Corridor from Bowling Green to Mayfield. And that corridor is one that was envisioned many, many, many years ago. I was still fairly young in my 35-year career with the Transportation Cabinet when this project was initially envisioned. And it was always envisioned as a high-type, four-lane facility between Bowling Green and Mayfield. And the idea being at that time to hook up our parkway system across southern Kentucky to Interstate 65. Well, as many things change, I mean, today, you know, we're hooking up I-65 with I-69 eventually in western Kentucky. So even more reason why the project is something that we should finish. A lot of people don't realize this. They know we're down to the final throes of the project, which involves two major bridges, one over Kentucky Lake and one over Lake Barkley. But they also know that we've got some work to do to extend or rebuild the project from the end of the Lake Barkley Bridge onto the Cadiz Bypass. And we have a project scheduled for letting this next week, I think, to four-lane the Cadiz Bypass to finish that to the standards we'd originally created. So all of this work is coming together. What people don't realize is that the remaining work, just those short sections that I identified there, totals almost $400 million. So a lot of work, a lot of energy being directed at the economy in Western Kentucky when you take the 6880 project alongside the I-69 work that we're moving. And it's a lot of positive energy for Western Kentucky. And we're very proud to be working in that direction. When we're finished, with the completion of the new bridges and the connections as proper to both ends of the project to have a fully functional four-lane facility from I-69 over to I-24 here in this region of the state, then we will be more than happy to talk about the I-65 speed limit, raising the speed limit to 65 miles an hour. And as we consider doing that, I'm very much in favor of of committing to the promise that we made many years ago, that 6880 would be that high tide facility all across southern Kentucky. A 65 mile an hour facility is what we would like. Obviously, in some congested areas, speed limit has to be reduced in those locations. But for the free flow sections out in the middle, 65 miles an hour makes perfect sense. I've been reluctant to just assign a 65 mile an hour speed limit to individual sections of that route until the whole thing was finished. And the reason for that, just hitting this straight on up front, is because what we did on the other end of this project was to connect I-24 to I-65. A reasonable corridor, the 65 miles an hour, was something that the driver, an average driver, and his expectation, when he hits that road, he knows that it's going from somewhere to somewhere, and he can virtually set cruise control except for the congested areas. In this part of the state at this moment, I don't have that kind of route. I have a route that absolutely would be eligible for 65 miles an hour to a point. And when you get to Aurora, that point ceases. At Aurora, you run into an 18-foot wide bridge. And I'm the guy with the pen in my hand, and frankly, that signs this memorandum that creates that 65 mile an hour speed limit. I don't want to look at the family of someone who came upon that bridge at 75 miles an hour and who hit that bridge not knowing that that 18-foot wide bridge awaited him. And you say, well, folks in Western Kentucky would never do that. We would know. That's true. I think most of you would know. But you also know this is a land of tourism, and we have people through this area all the time from other parts of the country, other parts of the world. And when you put up a sign that says 65 and they look at a map and they think that you can go from the Purchase Parkway, I-69, over to I-24, they think they can do that on cruise control. Somebody's going to find themselves in a difficult situation and is going to have to deal with that. So I've been difficult, to be sure, but it's been difficult for a reason, not difficult just to be difficult. And I hope you will appreciate that. It's a tough decision, but it's something that when we finish the bridges and we finish the roadway in the form that it should be in the Katy's area, then absolutely, I'll come back out of retirement if they'll let me assign that 65 mile an hour speed limit. So just know that, folks. So those are the two big things that I wanted to talk about. I was also asked about other major transportation projects in far western Kentucky as it relates to economic impact. I want to reiterate one more time that the 6880 corridor and I-69 are all about the regional economy. Whether it's tourism, the 6880 corridor, and other faster connections over to the southern part of Kentucky, or whether it's the I-69 corridor and the opportunities that are created by it, it's all about the regional economy, and I think everyone sees that and appreciates that. We do have other things that we've done and are doing that will also help the economy greatly. Ledbetter Bridge doesn't seem like much, maybe if you're not from the east end of Paducah or from Smithland, but you know that old bridge that stood over the Tennessee River for many years. I remember visiting my parents in Princeton and having on WPSD News, and one night a reporter was interviewing someone who had just driven across the bridge, and there was concern being raised about the ability of that bridge to carry the appropriate loads. And I remember the look on the citizen's face as I'm sitting there watching that on television, and we redoubled our efforts to try to get that old bridge fixed as fast as we could. And fortunately, we were able to do that. We worked very well with the district folks, Transportation of Paducah, and were able to work with the contractor, actually incentivize him to deliver the project faster, and got it open much quicker than we originally thought we could. So those are the kinds of things that we try to do to make sure that we're being responsive. We have a number of smaller bridge projects across this part of Western Kentucky. One of the things that I learned very early in my state transportation career is if you want to find bridge projects that need to be completed and need to be done, look at Western Kentucky, and especially far Western Kentucky with all the bayous and sloughs and whatever that we have bridges over, that backwater becomes a serious problem for. and many of you working in the counties know exactly what I'm talking about, the old timber bridges that for, it seems, decades we've been trying to replace and fix. So much happening on that front. Also pavements this summer, this past summer, you probably, several of you probably had heard adverse comments about all the delays on I-24 while we were out there fixing pavements, but I'll also tell you that once those projects are finished, we certainly don't hear complaints as people talk about how well the service rides, and so we're continuing to work hard on those things. Another project that's in the offing and something that we're keeping a close eye on, I've worked very closely with the Illinois Department of Transportation to try to look at how we go about putting in motion the replacement of the old Cairo Bridge. That bridge is one that has been in rough shape for about as long as I can remember. It still carries the loads reasonably well, but it is past time for us to be trying to lay the groundwork for a new bridge in that location. So I've been working with Illinois DOT. The appropriate thing to do, primarily because of access to Cairo, is to replace that old bridge at or near the existing location. And so we're working to do that. The two states haven't quite put together a final plan yet, but we're working with the Delta Regional Authority. We've gotten some funding to do some preliminary engineering work, and through that effort, we're making progress in that regard. So future highway plans, I think that's another big project for Western Kentucky that we will see. Let's see, another little project. We have a judge over in the Paducah area. We've got an access road to the industrial park there on the Ohio River Industrial Park. That project's moving along well, so we'll see if we can keep that on track. He likes that project. By the way, last night I just sat down and wrote some notes. I'm just sort of going through my notes to make sure I'm covering things that I was asked to look at. I was asked to look at river transportation and river ports in Western Kentucky. But let me just say that when it comes to river transportation, it does get taken for granted quite often. I had the great opportunity, part of the introduction, it was mentioned that I serve on the Executive Committee of the Transportation Research Board. I was in Washington, D.C. about 3 years ago, and 2 years ago, my very first executive meeting. And typically we have what are called red meat sessions in those committee meetings. And the red meat session, basically, they give the executive committee a challenge, and someone on the executive committee has to be the reporter for all of that. They call it the rapporteur. Well, that was my official responsibility for this particular session. And the session was on inland waterways, which was more than appropriate as far as I was concerned, and probably the reason they selected me to do this, knowing that the Ohio River forms much of our northern boundary of the state. So one of the great things that we chewed on during that meeting was the fact that inland waterways, and particularly the lock and dam system on the inland waterways, that the lock and dam system is in a desperate shape, a state of disrepair, if you will. And that right now, many of the locks and dams are well over 50 years old. And as the federal government tries to figure out how to deal with those issues, funding has been a very, very big issue. Well, you know, in this part of the state, that the cost to deal with a lock and dam and to do the job correctly, such as what the feds are trying to do with the Olmsted Dam, I mean, you've watched as that project cost has increased and things have gotten almost unmanageable with that. But the recently passed WRDA bill, the Water Resources Development Bill in Congress, has been an effort to bring both the House and Senate together on this whole issue of water resources. And that's been a very positive thing. So that investment of time listening in the TRB Executive Committee meeting, I learned a lot about my own state. I learned a lot about how we work in terms of the overall flow of goods and services on our waterways from Pittsburgh and from points north of St. Louis all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico and New Orleans. So lots of good things there. You know, I know that as I watch the barge lines and I look where they choose to headquarter, and I see that Paducah, because of the confluence with the Ohio, the Tennessee, Tom Bigby, and the Mississippi River not too far away, that Paducah has become a real hub, if you will, for some of the major barge lines. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing for Western Kentucky, our river ports up and down the Ohio River. We're excited about a little bit of funding, and it's just a dab. I wish it were more. A little bit of money that we have for river ports that we're able to help with some projects. But at some point, I'm hopeful that we'll see a day when we can actually have real money to spend in that direction. And I'll tell you why I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned because I think a lot of people, when it comes to modal transportation, people want to pit the modes against each other. They want to say, well, trucks can do this, and barges can't do that, and rail can't do this, or rail can do this, or barges can do this, and truck. Folks, as we look down the road, we heard Ron talk this morning about this global sea change, what's going on in South America, and where the economy is looking to be all about and from, and all of that as we look down the road. I really think that the trade between North and South America is something we need to be prepared to accommodate in the years ahead. I think as we do that, we'll find that there will be plenty for all the modes, and my hope is that we can work them in tandem and that we will complement one mode to the other rather than compete one mode with the other. So I'm hopeful that happens. One other quick tidbit, just for this audience, I think you all will appreciate that. I mentioned the TRB meeting where I led the discussion or was able to participate heavily in the discussion on inland waterways. Immediately upon flying home from TRB with all of that knowledge in my head, I had been told during that meeting that there was a ship that carried rocket parts from Decatur, Alabama to Cape Canaveral. And that sometimes it wasn't about the tonnage of the cargo that was being carried, but the sheer dollar value of the cargo being carried. And so they talked about this ship. I land in Lexington. I get home. I get up the next morning. I go to the office. Actually, before I got to the office, my cell phone was ringing. That ship, the Delta Mariner, has just taken out a 320-foot-long section of the US 68 Kentucky 80 Kentucky Lake Bridge. So I thought it was very ironic that the day before that elision, as it's called, happened, I'm actually involved in a discussion about that very ship. So I don't know what the forces were to work, but it was at least good to know what ship I was talking about. I'll wrap up here quickly. Key points for our region, 4 to 5 takeaways regarding transportation and economic development. Let me just say to you that, and you know this, you don't have to have me tell you this, there's a strong correlation between transportation access and economic development. I-69 and the ultimate completion of that route is huge for this region of the Commonwealth. Now, beyond that, if you look at the connection between I-24 and I-69 and the ultimate connection toward I-65 at Bowling Green or south to I-57 and points south of Kentucky, your region is going to be ideally situated for future growth. And I think that all of these issues working in tandem, all of these projects when you're finished, are going to give you the ability to do some things that you've always dreamed about doing, and so we're excited about that. You also, another takeaway, you have so much to offer in terms of recreation and tourism in this area. You know that. Part of what we're doing with the 6880 project, a lot of people know this, but some maybe don't. We're actually using a different kind of design on the bridges in the 6880 project. And that unique bridge design, I hope, will be an attraction for people as they come from the tourism perspective and other perspectives to this region. My hope is that they will find those bridges very attractive and beckoning, as it were. But when an industry or anyone is looking to locate or relocate into a region, the importance of recreation is incredible. I've learned that as we've talked to economic development clients. I meet quite often with Secretary Hayes as he talks with prospective clients, and the availability of recreation is something they always are asking about, and you folks have plenty of that. I mentioned the highway and water, highways, water transport, rail transport, aviation. Those things don't need to compete into the future. We need to figure out how to make them complement each other and work together to do that. So that's another takeaway. And then the last thing, I just want to sort of piggyback on the Lieutenant Governor's speech a few minutes ago. And he says this so much more eloquently, and there's no way I can add to what he said. I just want to underscore that the educated workforce is the key to the future. And it's my humble opinion that this region of the Commonwealth is perfectly situated for that. You have so much to offer in terms of higher education. The school systems throughout this region have always amazed me at their ability to take sometimes very little and invest it in our kids in the right ways to point the kids in directions that allow them to be successful. My own story is one of those. I grew up in Princeton, my family was not particularly well off, but I chose to go the community college route. I went to Hopkinsville Community College, 2 years there, received a transportation scholarship to go on to the University of Kentucky, where I received my engineering degree. I went to work in Frankfort for the transportation cabinet, and have been there ever since in a variety of roles with the cabinet. So it's the dream is very, very possible. And for me, when I'm talking to our young people, whether it's in this region or any other region of the Commonwealth, I always say if it can work for me, it can work for them, it can work for anyone. And so I'm incredibly proud of what the systems, the scholastic institutions out in this part of the state bring to the equation, and very proud to be a product of that. So what can MSU do? What can Murray State University do to collaborate for success in the region? I think it's very simple. I think it's very much what you're doing today. It's not unlike what I saw just yesterday in Pikeville, Kentucky with the SOAR initiative. And it's called teamwork. It's all about working together, all of you coming together to challenge the norms, to challenge what others would say to you you can't do. And armed with the knowledge of what you must do, you have to set out to make those positive things happen. I can assure you from the transportation perspective that we're working every day to deliver those projects that are most important to the future of this region from that perspective. But that's a piece of the puzzle. It's a piece of the puzzle, and the other pieces have to come together as well. And that's where Murray State, that's where all of you as county and city officials and other interested parties in this region have to work together to fill in those gaps and to stand together strong for this region. You know, yesterday I heard a lot of talk about a lot of needs in Eastern Kentucky, and believe me, folks, they are there. Those needs are there, they're real. But I could not help but be moved at the same time to think about Western Kentucky from whence I come. And the needs aren't that different. In many areas here in this part of the state, yes, the land is a little flatter, but the opportunity is not greater. So it's up to everyone in each region of the state to do the very best that they can with what they have, and teamwork is how that starts, and let me just encourage you to continue that. So I think with those remarks, there's a lot more I could talk about, but it may be good. I don't know, time-wise, I may have droned on too long, but if there's time.